find that people, when once they've unlocked like an epic squat, right? Like they're getting amazing depth, they're below parallel, their feet are flat, like everything looks good, they're driving through their heels. They need to make sure that they're loading that to a level where the nervous system remembers how to work throughout that entire range.
What's good, everybody? I'm Justin Miller, host and owner of the Legends of Athletics podcast. And of course, we're back with another great episode. I feel like I need to work on my intro because I know y'all tired of hearing that, but the show will go on and we'll get better with time. This is episode 116, I believe, when it comes out. This will be episode 116. And so, of course, we're trying to do things a little different. I always try to make sure that I'm spreading the love within health and wellness. Of course, most of you know me. My trade is sports performance, but performance encompasses a lot of discipline. So it encompasses, you know, your physical attributes as well as your mental attributes, recovery, rest, all of that stuff in one, even mental, going to the mental side of things. And so today, for most of you adults that are listening to me, y'all have grown with me over the years. I've been in the industry for 9 years, we're going on 10, and I'm no longer in my 20s. And so one thing that I figured out being 30 plus is that functional movement patterns and mobility are necessary. Of course, most of us, when we were younger, from high school, even in our 20s, we were used to getting out the car, going straight to the gym, and not warming up, not moving properly, and things like that. And those things, over time, affect us as far as our performance and our movements in our everyday lives. And so I reached out to Mr. Scott Bailey over Instagram, and he was kind enough to respond to me, one, and take the invitation and join me on the podcast. And so me, I'm going to be learning just like y'all, so I'm going to sit back and learn. Scott is definitely known and has built a great brand as far as the functional movement space, and it's not a lot of fluff. So it's not a lot of things that you can look on his Instagram page and say like, oh, it looks good, but it doesn't really look like it applies, or it's just a bunch of jumping around. But these are things that even he doesn't know this until now. But it's things that I've taken and I've said, well, I watched a video, I've taken it to the gym, and I've tried them myself, and I like the results that I have gotten consistently. And so with that, Mr. Scott, I appreciate you for your time, and I want to give you the floor to announce and talk about yourself a little bit and build yourself up even more than I've tried to, and let the people know who you are.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for the invitation, and I'm glad that we finally found some time to do it. So basically, I'm a kinesiologist. I came from a school in Canada called McGill University, and I've been training people for roughly 18 years, but I only got into mobility around 2015, and I was big into functional training at that time, and that was when CrossFit was kind of taking off. Right. And one of the things about CrossFit is that if you were playing, you know, sports, like I used to play lacrosse and I was a wrestler and all these different sports, and no one ever prioritized stretching. And so all of a sudden, when you get thrown into the ring with all these complex movements like cleans and jerks and snatches, all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I've never done any of this stuff. And you see people who are not as strong as you, but they're lifting more simply because they can move better. So there had to be something to it. And basically the pivotal turning point in when I changed how I train people was right around in 2015. I had a back injury because I used to be one of those guys that would like wear a belt and I'd wear wrist wraps and I'd be wearing, practically a helmet pretty much. And and basically I started lifting like heavier and heavier and heavier stuff. And I was getting good results. But then one day my back was like, enough is enough. And, and I just was like, I got to change how I do things. And since then I slowly started to aggregate kind of a library of different tools and techniques. And I was just really shocked at just how rapid the modern way of mobility training was for getting results pretty much instantly. Like you do a few different tricks and all of a sudden you've unlocked a ridiculous amount of potential in your performance. And then I just doubled down and I learned more and more and more. And that's when I started to obviously build this library. like I said, I've been coaching for quite a long time. And basically between 2015 and 2018, I was in charge of another CrossFit gym. I'd had around 250 members, and I was building them through kind of this mobility training stuff. And then sure enough, around the late 2019, when, you know, the early onset of COVID and whatnot, that gym didn't exist anymore. And, my friends and everything told me, why don't you try putting your stuff on Instagram? And so once I figured that process out, that's when things started to get a little bit interesting. And I would say maybe after 1 year of posting, I had a few techniques that just did really, really well. And then it became obvious that I would make this more my full-time job.
Yeah. And honestly, I would say like the mobility side of things, that is something that I think as you get older, it just raised the alarm to that's something that you have to add into your game. Mm-hmm. I know you were talking about the CrossFit movements and complex movements and things like that. Man, I have a kid right now. He's a much better power cleaner than me. And I'm not saying that the kid's not strong. He's very strong, but I'm stronger just by years and nature of training. But I can't get into the front squat position for whatever reason. When I'm power cleaning, I cannot drop into a front squat and lift it back up. I can muscle it up, but I can't drop into that front squat position and you know, do it properly. And so, you know, for me, just, I agree 100%. I think even today in 2024, that the space of functional movement patterns and mobility is still very, very new. There are not many people out there that know how to dissect it, know how to go about the biomechanics of it, and know what really works. Because I'm sure that took some training on your own and some time on your own, just kind of playing with different movement patterns and discovering different things just to figure that out. So how did you kind of go about getting into figuring out, well, this works well for the shoulder, this works well for the rotator cuff, things like that? How did you kind of get into that?
So basically, very similar approach to you. I was that same guy, always trying to muscle through things and weight and just wasting energy when someone who's more flexible was doing it with so much more smoothness and you know, basically grace.
Right.
But basically, what I learned throughout this journey is you really have to treat it like a troubleshooting guide, where every single movement that you're going to do, there's going to be an efficient pattern to do it. There's going to be an efficient movement pattern. And if you're not able to accomplish that with a level of competency, it's not that you're a bad athlete. It's just that you're not as efficient as the guy who can do it. So when you start to see these athletes at extremely high levels, not only are they, you know, fundamentally strong, but they've honed in on what has made them more efficient. So they actually spend less energy. And so basically, when you look at mobility training now, you want to look at it as like a troubleshooting guide. Like if you're talking about squats, like you want to look like, are my ankles flexible enough? Are my knees causing the restriction? Am I getting a pinch in my hip? And then I'm not suggesting that you need to do all the techniques in the world, but what you do is you slowly pick and choose which ones are driving you high return. And the cool thing about the stuff that I teach, that a lot of mobility coaches teach, is that you'll see a result in 2 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. And so if you see that result and it is favorable and you are getting the end result that you're trying to achieve, then, you know, you're on the right track, because clearly that was a restriction that your body had that you've now overcome, and now you train it into place. And the only downfall of the mobility training and stuff that I teach is that, sure, you're going to get the results right away, but the problem is a lot of people, they forget to actually make sure that they're training it in position. Because I find that people, once they've unlocked like an epic squat, right? Like they're getting amazing depth, they're below parallel, their feet are flat, like everything looks good, they're driving through their heels. They need to make sure that they're loading that to a level where the nervous system remembers how to work throughout like that entire range.
Yeah.
So, you know, because where people don't get results is simply because they're doing all this mobility training, they're achieving good range of motion, but then they don't train. So then all of a sudden the next day, it just like recoils back into the same positions. And then they have to do that whole process over and over and over again. And I mean, it's funny because it's an ongoing battle. It's always transient. Some days are obviously better than others. But what I found is that by mixing these types of hacks in conjunction with your existing routines, you're going to get a lot more out of your routines.
Well, let me ask you this. How has the mobility side of things impacted you in your daily life as far as like how you operate, how you feel? Just how has that impacted you?
So how old are you?
I'm 33. Well, 33. Yeah, 33. I'm about to be 34 next month. So I had to think about it. I'm 33 right now.
Okay. So you probably noticed around 30, things started to get a little bit slower.
Right.
You probably noticed like everything was like, oof, like it's, I'm not as quick and I'm not as agile and whatever. But the way I found was that the lifestyle of an adult who has responsibilities, who has desk work, who has, you know, different, it's not the same lifestyle that you had when you were younger. And not only that, but your tissue's not responding the same simply because that lifestyle is putting you in positions more than the optimal position, right? So
exactly.
Even just us sitting here right now having this conversation, like we're seated all day.
Yep.
So this means the glutes are turned off, the hip flexors are slowly tightening up, and it's just going to slowly cause kind of problems down the line. So where I found was that all you're really trying to do is you're trying to train efficiently, but you're trying to also, you know, fix the kind of day-to-day things that are going on that are just slowing you down because, you know, living kind of that regular daily life, you just accrue like really bad movement patterns, like simply like rounding your shoulders forward, letting your shoulders come in. Like these are not conducive to very efficient movement patterns when it comes to gym performance. So I would say that a lot of the mobility training is just simply allowing your body a chance to get back to where it is effective and then training with that regained range of motion.
Yeah. I'll say I'm going to use myself for a personal example. This year is the first year I dealt with a lot of injuries. Like none that are like sidelining injuries. Of course, I'm not playing competitive sports, but like a lot of like soft tissue injuries. So my breakdown in movement pattern is really what pushed me to focus more on my mobility. Because I've dealt with a knee. Well, first of all, this is not to be bad on CrossFit. So let me say this. So last year, I had a friend that was talking, we want to do a CrossFit competition just to be competitive and things like that, like a friendly competition. And one of the things in the competition was like, I think a 24 inch box jump, but it was like 50 reps. Like you share the reps, of course, but it was like 50 reps. And so I was untrained at this point. Like I had set out the gym for like a year, but like my brain was like, I can do it. And so I went into the gym and was like, all right, I'm gonna train on this. And my thinking of training was like, and this as a trainer, I knew better, but I just, sometimes your will overrides what the brain is telling you. And so I was like, man, I'm gonna just put myself through this competition just like a mock trial to see how far out I am. And so, man, I started doing box jumps and something in my knee popped. It wasn't a meniscus tear, it wasn't an ACL tear, nothing like that. But like my knee just swelled after that. And so I gave it like so of course I sat down for like another month or 6 weeks or something like that. And I came back and like, man, ever since then, I just had like, it'll swell, then it go down, it'll swell, go down. But like, I can do everything I want to do. And so first that happened. And then because my movement pattern when I came back was incorrect, then I had ankle problems in the same leg. And then, of course, I guess over time, I don't know how this happened, but I'm a right-handed person. My left shoulder started hurting. And so I was like, again, nothing that my range of motion wasn't restricted, but my strength was gone. And so I tell people this, and I tell athletes this, it's like when you're younger, a lot of times we can muscle our way through stuff. So you don't really focus and pay attention to the injuries like you would if, like at my age, at your age, you don't pay attention to them the same way because the impact isn't as much unless it's something that requires surgery that forcibly sits you down. And so to me, like, I think what you said about what we do on a regular basis, that's what adults, I think, have a hard time coming to grips with, is looking at your lifestyle and how that is affecting you and how that is moving you to be less mobile, less explosive, slower in speed, due to even activity. Because if you watch your phone, not that it's a perfect metric, but looking at your step counters and things like that, most of us, if you could take data from when you were 20 versus 30 versus 40 versus 50, your steps, you're probably not even getting the same steps in a day. Are there any indicators on mobility and quality of life for adults?
Well, basically, to kind of highlight your story, one of the things that I actually think is extremely valuable, especially for the people watching this, like extremely valuable, is that there are so many people out there that get probably caught in those situations where they get hit with an athletic challenge like you and your 50 box jumps, but they haven't done it in 5 or 10 years.
Exactly.
But the brain thinks I can do it. And one of the things about these things is that our body is built in a way where if you've built muscle over time, muscle is harder to lose than say your cardiovascular system or say your mobility. So like, because of the amount of time and the work that you've done, you're going to still have that muscle mass, even if you've taken a year or two off training. So like, for sure, you're going to feel like you're competent and being able to do it. Like, how many old guys do you see in the gym? They're like, oh, I can still do this. They throw two plates on and then it's like, ah, but I you see it all the time, right? Or see it all the time. But what I find is that nobody. And if you look at it, that situation would never happen if it was like a 6 mile run, right? Because you're like, there's no way my conditioning is where it was to be able to do a six minute mile versus to do 50 box jumps. Right. So the way I see mobility is it's kind of in the middle, because you will lose mobility progressively the longer you don't do anything, unlike strength. Right. You could stop training for a couple months or a year and you're still going to have a decent amount of strength.
Exactly. But
the mobility's definitely faded. And then for sure, the conditioning's faded the most, right? If you don't do anything, your conditioning's going to be terrible. So
exactly.
So basically, you know, to kind of accent why this point is really important is because people need to really just dial in and be in tune with what their body can actually do and what is considered efficient. And I think that kind of learning how to adopt somewhat of a an optimization strategy. So that way, like, for instance, when you were about to do those box jumps, you know, pick a few mobilizations to get your body kind of in tune with the fact that you are about to do this amount of workload. So I don't know, it could be a couch stretch, could be some ankle, could be some barbell smashing of the calves. And then you're more inclined to being in alignment with what the expectation is of the exercise. And then you're less likely to probably hurt yourself. So I do think that, that story is very similar to a lot of people that I see. And it's only until that moment when I would say that people start to take it seriously.
I think that's life. Like, that's why I say, like, I think you're forced into it at some point. I asked you this to kind of give more to it. So of course I work with a lot of athletes. Do you see, all right, you used to be an athlete yourself. You're still pretty active as far as being an athlete now in your adult age. When you watch athletics, right, how do you see mobility hindering some athletes and helping some athletes? I'm not sure. Do you watch American football?
I don't watch much American football. I do watch kind of sports in general. Obviously, I have a propensity towards, you know, the functional training and the CrossFit stuff and whatnot. And what I would say is that the interesting thing about athletics nowadays is that everything is so dialed in that when you see high level athletics, you know, for a fact, in order for the body to achieve such great feats of performance, that someone on their team is taking care of these measures, right? Because to play at the high level now, you have everything dialed in. You have your nutrition dialed in. You have someone taking care of your mobility. You have a physiotherapist following you around. You know, it's no longer like, you know, the early 2000s or the late 90s where you had athletes who weren't even thinking about stuff like this.
Exactly.
Now it's like, it's for sure. And that's why I think that some of the athletes of today in the modern world are just in a totally different caliber than the athletes of the 90s or the 80s, because the level of competition is so much higher. And they are taking care of all these other facets that are adding up to it, because the competition is so high, if you're not checking all those boxes and if you're not doing all these necessary things, you're going to fall off way faster than anyone else.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that mobility training is at this moment in time, 2024, I think it's like become a very popular thing.
Mm-hmm. And
personally, I think the next trend is going to be nutrition. I think once people start to really hone in on what is considered an optimal performance-based nutrition diet, that's when you're going to see the next level of athletics really go through the roof. Because, I mean, up until I'd say maybe 20 years ago, it was all about strength, how to get stronger, how to get faster, how to do this. You know, we learned all those different techniques and athletes got great. But then they realized, okay, well, now we're at a carrying capacity. We can't actually get people that much stronger, you know. So what can we do to boost up the average and get them better? So now they started to implement the mobility training. All of a sudden, you have athletes getting less hurt, becoming more efficient, getting better results. And now I think in the future, we're going to see, okay, now we've covered this and this. Now let's get the nutrition up so that we can reinforce this whole system. So yeah. I think that's kind of the trend that we're going to see in the future.
Yeah, and I think I want to back what you're saying, because mobility now – I hear more high school athletes even talking about it, like, hey, how can I improve my mobility and things like that? Because in the world of sports, like, you know this, your body's moving in so many different planes and axes that you have to be mobile in order to take hits, in order to recover after you take the hit, get up and walk off, and to do the same thing at a high level repetitively day in and day out. I think you brought up a good point about, you know, these days, people that don't add all that to their repertoire fall out of the games much faster than those who do take all that stuff into account. Mm-hmm. Because getting bigger and stronger in today's athletics is a small aspect versus availability. So that comes into your mobility, your recovery and training. And like you said, just where the nutrition side of things, like nutritionists used to be just strapped to a team and they would work with that team for however long and maybe do a little something. Like now you have a lot of those people go into freelance work or doing other things. And so it's giving more opportunity for people to look into it, as well as social media making the world smaller so you can see a lot more of these things.
And one of the interesting things is that if you look at the modern day elite athlete, okay, look at the different sport, you're going to notice that the elites, like let's say the top 50 in the world, they all have a similar look.
Right.
Because like basically natural selection has found that look, like all the top cyclists will look similar. All the top boxers will look similar. All the top UFC will look similar. All the top football players, they all have a similar. All the top CrossFitters. And if you look at them on a statistical level, you're going to find that, wow, this is really the idealistic body type and shape that will excel in this because they have, you know, kind of a mechanical advantage in all the different things, right?
Right.
You're going to notice like cyclists, they're all leg heavy. They're all like 180 pounds or less. And, and you know, you look at boxers, like if you compare the old Rocky movies, the guy's jacked, he's yoked, but no boxer will look like that today.
Yeah.
Because it's not improving the outcome of the sport. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to see that at the extremely high levels that there is an idealistic condition that person should be in. And you'll notice it at the, like, you know, among the best of the best. So,
yeah, that, like you said, muscle, again, the more we learn, the more the more you learn, the better it becomes for everybody in all seasons. Right. I don't know if you're familiar with Patrick Mahomes. His picture was floating around. Like people are like, he got the dad by it. But I'm like, in athletics, it's more performance and output versus stage readiness. If you're a bodybuilder, you want to be stage ready. If you're if I got a hockey player, I want him to be able to perform at top level every night that he's asked to do the same thing. Versus, oh, he looks good outside of his uniform. And things like that, you know, and I think that's a big thing because muscle uses a lot of oxygen. Muscle also to be as like the using Rocky, right? To be as chiseled and look like granite, you do have to lose some mobility to produce rigidity in the muscle. And that's something I'm glad you brought that point home, because that's hard for some athletes to understand. It's like, hey, you'll look good on this side, and aesthetically you'll be here on this side, but you're also going to be losing this point in it as well.
And it's a constant struggle, because at the end of the day, we live in a very social media world where everybody wants to look good, and they all want to have the ripped and chiseled physique, and they all want to look amazing, but that comes at a cost, right? Mm-hmm. And you know it just as much as I do, the bigger and stronger you get, the more gassed you get. you're completely gassed out so fast, and it's really finding that delicate balance, and then, you know, tuning yourself as best you can for whatever you want to achieve. So whatever sport you are in, you know, really making sure that you're doing the sport specific stuff to get you better. And the Rocky thing is a perfect example. I mean, in the 80s, you know, people didn't know that much about sports performance. They didn't know that much about training at the time. So right. They thought that the look that he had was ideal. But I mean, to be that jacked nowadays, you wouldn't make it one or two rounds, you know, you'd be smoked.
So we've talked about this a little bit before. Earlier in the show, we talked about the limitations in adults. We talked about us right now, how we're sitting, lengthening of the shortening of the hip flexors, basically deadening the glute muscles, relaxing the hamstrings, stretching the hamstrings, and even shortening the quadriceps muscles as well in adults. And for some of y'all, I'm like, let me get out of layman's terms. So for some of y'all, I say this, your hip flexors can be so tight that it causes pelvic tilt, whether it be anterior or posterior. It depends on the person. That's just a matter of alignment. If anybody ever says alignment to you, that's kind of what they're talking about. If they're talking about your pelvis, you can say alignment for multiple spots on the human body, but we'll use the pelvis for right now. In adults, what are common range of motion limitations that you see, if you can tell me that you see that limit adults in their, let's go outside of the weight room, let's go outside of exercise, and limit them in their daily lives and their daily routines for some that may not exercise like that?
For sure. And to really double down on the point that you made about the anterior pelvic tilt, one of the most valuable things that for the people watching this is that if you're someone who's sitting down all day, that is for sure going to be a limiting factor in your day-to-day life, because the tighter that psoas gets, the more it's going to curve the lumbar spine. So people have a hard time even standing up from a chair. They have a hard time. It takes them 5 to 10 seconds just to straighten themselves out. Like right off the bat, if it's hard for someone to just achieve a regular standing position from any other position, mm-hmm. you know that there's some kind of imbalance going down the line, or something as simple as putting your hands above your head. If these basic tasks are proving to take longer to achieve than they should, then you know that something's out of alignment. And strangely enough, the hip flexor thing that you mentioned, okay, mm-hmm. is that it never occurred to me when I had hurt my back, because it was that exact problem, that attacking my front by, it's called a gut smash, where you lie on a medicine ball, mm-hmm. was the only thing that fixed my back pain when I smoked out my back. And that's when I understood really the dynamic connection between how the hip flexors are truly impacting that lumbar spine, and how just simply sitting down, even if it's a couple hours a day, is having such a detrimental effect on your overall function and posture.
Well, I'll say this. I had some lower back problems, and strength and doing hip flexor strengthening exercises actually alleviated that for me. I can't remember what trainer I seen doing it, but I know there's things you can do with a band, and then there's things that you can do as far as like, if you want to load that even more than what the band is capable of, you can use like if you got any type of like pulley machines in your gym or something like that, you can just strap, get one of those ankle straps or a little handle strap, put around your foot and pull with just that small muscle. But like you said, it does so much. Could you delve a little deeper into, for those that may not be familiar with anatomy, could you go a little deeper on the psoas muscle?
For sure. So the psoas, to simplify it, the psoas is a hip flexor, And basically it connects the lumbar spine, which is running down your back. And you, we already know that your spine has a natural curve to it, mm-hmm. but it basically pulls it to the front and it attaches on your femurs. So when you are in a seated position, this is getting, you know, progressively shortened. And the more seated you are, the more restricted it could ultimately be because you're kind of stuck there. Now, when you go to stand up, if you've ever found that it's hard to get extension, then you know that this is causing you a little bit of an obstacle in your day-to-day life. So to double down on what you said, you're 100% right. Once you get that tissue moving again through, like I would do the gut smash to relieve the tissues, right? So if you do tweak your back, the gut smash will get your back feeling better. But then to make sure it never comes back, that's where the strengthening comes in. You have to really double down on hip flexor strengthening because the stronger that tissue is, the less it's going to feel like it has to hang on mm-hmm. to make up for its lack of strength.
So with the gut smash, are you asking the, let's say for the audience, we're asking them to lie down face down on the medicine ball?
Yeah.
When you're lying there, are you relaxing and letting it just let the ball do the work, or are you actively pushing yourself into a position?
Yeah, basically, it seems so counterintuitive to fix a back problem through going through your stomach. But basically, by using like a medicine ball or a very firm ball, you're able to drive pressure to the front of the spine, which ultimately will relax kind of the posterior side of the spine. Mm-hmm. And it'll basically allow these muscles a chance to just take a break, which can get rid of any kind of spasms or any kind of tightness that you might have. And it'll buy enough time for you to start doing the hip flexor training where you start pulling your knees into your chest to reinforce those tissues. Now, if I don't know if you've seen online, there's a very famous device called a SoRite.
I haven't seen it.
And it's a scoop like device. And it's basically like a fork that people put in their stomach.
I think I've seen you use it. I think on some of your videos, I didn't know what it was called though. Like the little, it's got the little points with the middle part cut out.
Exactly. So basically, this design. So if you're beginning and you're just starting this, using a medicine ball is definitely going to get you an immediate result. Where the SoRite takes another advantage is that the psoas kind of goes on the side of the spine. So what happens is by using that scoop and having those prongs, you're able to attack that psoas a little bit more precisely and get a little bit more relief. And one of the reasons why I met up with the guy and we started collaborating together was simply because he sent me a few units and I was actually really impressed at how mm-hmm. effective it was. That basically took the concept of gut smashing, which is with the medicine ball, and then really got it better through more targeted, more precise surface area hitting the psoas. So all in all, I mean, at the end of the day, do you need that device? Sure, it's a luxury, and I think that it's definitely beneficial. And if you're someone who's dealing with a lot of back issues, yeah, for sure, it's definitely going to get the good result. But I think gut smashing is something definitely worth experimenting with. And mm-hmm. then, like you said, find some metric of integrating hip flexor training into your lifestyle, and you should fix all your problems.
Have you ever did any RPR?
RPR, let me take it. No. I'm still here.
All right.
I'm pulling it up behind the window here.
Reflexive. Yeah, reflexive performance. I can't think of it. Reflexive. Hold on. Sorry about that, guys. We doing this.
All right, this is good. This is live. I love it. This is perfect.
Yeah, reflexive performance reset.
Okay.
So RPR was popularized by Chris Corfist, who is a sports performance or speed performance coach. But he also, it's like a level one, a level two, level three. They have classes for it. But it used to go under a different name, but then they changed it to RPR just for legal reasons and things like that. But it also, there are exercises to see if a person's, to see if the psoas is activated or turned on. And mm-hmm. then just like the SoRite that you were talking about, if you don't have that device with you, you can use your hand to kind of dig into a point in the gut to turn that psoas muscle on and activate mm-hmm. it. And so that's something that's RPR. It's just the short name for reflexive performance reset.
For sure.
It's something that I use my athletes, man. I went down a rabbit hole on it. I like it, but it's definitely useful.
But just to say that using your hand, I mean, for a lot of athletes that have been hurt before or have had hip flexor issues, I'm sure that when they went to a physiotherapist, there was some form of hand massage on that psoas where the physio was basically digging their hand into you. And I know people that use like a kettlebell handle to get in there and whatnot. And I mean, once again, it's just an additional, it's an additional tool to kind of correct kind of another postural thing. Cause at the end of the day, where we're at right now in this conversation is that we're trying to correct something that went wrong. Mm-hmm. So the moral of the story is to prevent it from going wrong in the first place is you got to move around a little bit. You got to strengthen those hip flexors. And not only that, but a lot of people, the other side of the coin is, and an even more advanced thing is that you need to also make sure that you're working on your glutes, because the more that you're developing the glutes, believe it or not, in order to get hip extension, your brain, when you contract your glutes, will also send a signal to the front of the body to relax, right? Reciprocal inhibition. So a lot of people, we could do all the releasing and all the strengthening that we want, but if we really want to truly keep the system in check, the building up the glutes is going to be extremely essential, because it's going to also make sure that there's an adequate level of muscular tone on both sides of the equation.
I'll tell you a funny story using myself again. Naturally, I didn't realize until 33, so I want y'all to put that together this year, that I compensated a lot. So I used to say, and this is funny, but I'm going to be honest. So like my wife, she always talks about my butt. She was like, man, you got the smallest butt, like muscled up, but like my butt would never grow. I could squat all day, do all this stuff all day, but like it would never grow. And so what I found out was like, and this is funny, but it wasn't activated. It wasn't even turned on. Like I did everything with my quads instead of like using my glutes to stand, to run, things like that. So you build this compensation pattern. And I'm going to go back to what you said earlier, right? We talk about the central nervous system, training those patterns to be, to fire correctly, one, positionally where you should be, two, because I've gone so many years doing the same thing. I have to actively like activate, sit, and then say, all right, this should be firing here. Let me break it down, or let me build up to that point, whatever I need to do to activate that muscle. Of course, as you get older, you're going to have some wasting that naturally happens, occurs, atrophy and things like that. But like you said, it's the, a lot of times we get caught up in what the car looks like and we forget the engine. The small muscles make the engine go. So your spark plugs, your starters and things like that. If you turn the key over and the starter doesn't fire up, the rest of the car ain't moving. It doesn't matter what's going on. You can have a V6, a V8, whatever. It's not moving. And so like when you look at the hip flexor, this is anybody that's not familiar with anatomy. I'm just going to make it a point. If you look at your hip flexor in comparison to your quads or your hamstrings or even your glutes, you're going to be like, it's no way that that small muscle affects all of that stuff. And just like same thing with the glutes, like you got your glute max, your glute min and all that stuff. Like it all plays a role in us as our daily function. Can you tell me or tell us, tell our audience, how can they identify if that, okay, let's say a person has a back problem, right? You can tell me if this example makes sense. If it doesn't, you can clean it up for me. If a person has a lower back problem, how can they, should they, how could they attack this problem? And we're saying this is independent. If you have a severe back problem, of course, go to your medical professional. But how could that person, they just deal with a chronic back problem, should they attack their hip flexors first, or should they attack the glutes first, or should they go for both? Or how could they kind of figure out where their problem is sitting at?
So to double down on that, this is somewhat of a complicated topic, because it's really in my experience, it is a trial and error procedure, right? First, you need to establish what's causing it in the first place, because sometimes you're right. It may not be the hip flexors. It might be an underlying issue. It could actually even be you know, some kind of fracture. It could be some kind of herniated disc. It could be something along those lines. But for the majority of the population who are just dealing with soreness or kind of ongoing issues, who are not at risk of further really hurting themselves, and they just want to fix the problem, my recommendation usually is really experiment with a bunch of different mobilization techniques to basically help open up the hips. And then, you know, take a whiteboard or take a piece of paper and start writing down like, okay, did this one make a difference? Am I feeling a little bit better? And then evaluate what that technique was designed to do, right? So you could be looking at a pigeon pose. Okay, so now the glutes are in external rotation. Does that make my hips feel better? You could be looking at like a lizard lunge. That's an internal rotation. You could be looking at, is my groin too tight? Is it causing me to be in anterior pelvic tilt? Are my hamstrings too weak? Like, is it my hip flexors? Does gut smashing make me feel better? You know, or maybe it's deadlifting. Does deadlifting cause a significant amount of pain? Like, and not only are you looking for things that make you feel better, but you're also looking for things that make you feel worse too, because if something's really causing a problem, there's a good chance there's a lot of information there to help you identify what the next logical step is. But at the end of the day, this becomes a bit of a situation where, you know, if you are someone out there who is dealing with an issue, you need to get a little bit of guidance to help minimize the amount of trial and error that you're doing. So that way you can get to the answer a lot faster than someone who isn't dealing with that. But it's funny, but before this question, you had brought up a very interesting point about not using your glutes enough. And I think this is another exceptionally valuable thing for the world to hear, because so many people have squatting ability, but they barely use their glutes. And in my opinion, it's because the fear of falling backwards when they squat prevents them from putting their weight in their heels. And if you don't put your weight in your heels, if you don't drive through your heels, you are never going to be using your glutes to the fullest potential that you possibly can. So when it comes to training someone for the very first time, or when I get a new beginner or something like that, one of my very first steps is I go to box squats, where they actually sit down on the box and then they go to stand up. And the cool thing about this is that by sitting down completely at a dead stop, it's guaranteed that they will push through their heels to stand up.
Right.
But when you are loaded, like even if it's just a barbell, the internal fear of falling backwards will always prevent you from putting all your weight in your heels. But having your weight in your heels is a sure shot way to guaranteeing that you're going to get more power output in the squat. And the guys that figure that out quicker have better results and are more efficient and burn less energy than the guys that don't. And the problem with a lot of the guys that don't figure it out, they become so reliant in the forefoot. Like when I see guys squat who can't even move their toes because their weight is so far in the front of the foot, all of a sudden you're loading that anterior chain. Those quads are developing on a very, very tight level. And then you start to see people have all different kinds of systems go out of whack simply because the quads are taking the whole hit.
Yeah. So that's a good point. Which we'll stay on this point. Do you think following injuries that adults are, that mobility is addressed correctly? I know within rehab, a lot of times they get you back to baseline, but do you think, and they restore some of your range of motion, but do you think from a, like we said, being strong through the entire pattern, do you think that that's addressed really within following a lot of injuries?
Falling in what sense? Like old people falling, or
no? I'm sorry. That's my southern draw. Following an injury.
Southern draw. Okay, nice. following. So, well, hang on. So then rephrase it. So what exactly is the question? Go ahead.
Let's say we have an adult athlete, whoever, they roll their ankle, or let's say break it. We'll break the ankle.
Broken ankle.
And they go to rehab to address that injury. I know a lot of times, or they go to physical therapy to address that injury. I'm sorry. I'm talking like we're in America, my bad. So
I love it.
They're going to physical therapy to address that injury.
Right.
A lot of times I know that the therapist will address the strengthening of that injury. Let's get some range of motion back in that injury, at following that injury. But do you think from your perspective that a lot of the mobility saying, all right, let's look at how the injury occurred and let's get stronger through range of motion in that, in following that injury is taken care of? I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Well, I would like to think that the medical professions that take care of people are doing due diligence to make sure mm-hmm. that these measures are taken care of. So I have a high degree of confidence that yes, they are looking at these components, but I think that the likelihood of an individual returning back to their patterns of behavior, their regular life, is what mm-hmm. puts them in a state of never truly getting a chance to heal and whatnot. Because how many times have you seen that, you know, a person who gets injured goes to a physiotherapist, they're 100% compliant for the time that they are in physiotherapy, mm-hmm. they get better, all of a sudden they're not in that environment anymore and yeah. their compliance goes down. So all of a sudden they start defaulting back into the same patterns of behavior. So at the end of the day, it's really just a question of compliance. Are you upkeeping the work that is needed for the joints that are needing it, right?
Right.
And it doesn't even have to be someone who's had a full-blown injury, right? It doesn't have to be someone. Like, I see all the time, guys that are in their 40s and 50s who will go running for 10 kilometers. I don't know what that is for you guys, but run...
The metric system's complete. So we do miles and miles right. per hour, stuff like that. But I'm with you.
Let's say like they'll go running for like 5 miles. I think that's like 7.4 kilometers or something
yeah.
like that. Okay. So they don't even take a time to either, you know, loosen up the quads or the ankles in advance, and they just jump right into it. But it's like if you're not in a position to actually be paying attention to the tissues you're about to use, then mm-hmm. sure enough, those tissues are going to snap back and they're going to get back in your face. Mm-hmm. So I think that when it comes to people under actual care, like when they're going to a physiotherapist, they've had an injury, they are 100% compliant, then, you know, the results are going to be fantastic. But the problem is not really the treatment or care. I mean, sometimes the care may not be optimal, or maybe the problem was more severe than they thought, but usually it's a question of compliance. And I think one of the interesting things about the direction that the modern world is going, especially with, you know, the rise in popularity of my channel, is that the techniques that I show are allowing people to be a bit more compliant mm-hmm. with keeping the mobility that they get from either rehab from an injury or, soreness from sport or training or whatever the case. So, you know, because there's a certain degree of, if you know something's going to give you a result in 2 minutes, like if you knew your shoulder would feel better after 2 minutes,
right,
you're going to do it. You're just going to do it, like, cause you yep. know, it's going to work. So it just, that makes it a lot easier to stay compliant.
Yeah. And I think like you talked about too, and it's the same thing as preparing your body to run, the same thing following injury is just, before you go out there and go full-fledged into it, prep the body, prime the body for movement, and then go after it versus just rolling off, doing the static stretching, and then going right into it. It's better to prime the body and kind of get everything loose and warm. I'll follow into another question I want to ask you. I had to look at this one because this is one that I'm excited to get to. So I've seen people talk about it and I haven't had the chance to research it. So I've seen it on your page, the flossing. What does flossing, I don't really can't ask this question more than the surface that I'm about to ask it on, but what does flossing do exactly for the body or to the muscles or anything like that?
Have you tried it?
I tried it, but I think I may have done it wrong. I'm not sure. I did the one where you had the, and I can't, this may not, I may be wrong, but I think you had the barbell like on the popliteal of your knee, and mm-hmm. then you kind of yep. sat on it and opened up the knee yep. cap. I like yep. that one because it felt great to the knee that's hurt actually. But
it's very painful the very first time, but it goes away pretty quick. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. But that's the one that I tried. Outside of that, I hadn't tried any other ones, but I like that one though.
Strangely enough, that technique. In all my years of training clients and with all the different injuries, that technique was the best technique I found for people that have like plantar fasciitis, mm-hmm. which is the problem in the bottom of their feet because yeah. their calves are pulling too tight. So I found that not only does that do a great job of creating space in the knee, it does an excellent job of releasing the calf, releasing the soleus, releasing the Achilles tendon as you move down that chain, and it just releases the feet. So I found that, like, as ruthless as that technique is, the payoff of that is really, really good, especially if you're someone who struggles with ankle mobility and you need to have, you know, a deeper squat and whatnot. But to get to your point about flossing, so flossing was made popular many years ago, and it kind of came back. There was, you know, Rogue Fitness had manufactured it, and then I know Kelly Start was pushing it big time. And then I saw the knees over toes guy, Ben Patrick, was pushing it for the knees and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I have been pushing it for kind of like, you know, 5-6 years, because what I found is that flossing is very similar to any other type of soft tissue work, meaning that it's a very aggressive form of, it's basically a foam roller you can't escape from.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So basically, you know how you are rubbing out the muscles on a foam roller or like, yeah, a hard PVC tube? Basically, it's the exact same mechanics. The only difference is that you're getting the added benefit of kind of restoring motion that you would normally do. And because you are stopping the blood flow, the second you take off the cuff or the limb or the pressure, that blood flow comes back in. So any kind of edema or swelling or whatnot gets kind of recirculated back into the system. So it definitely helps with, you know, any kind of swelling or issues that you might have.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, it's like a party trick. I mean, you'll get guys, you know, who are struggling with basic, you know, movement to restore pretty much full range of motion in a matter of like 2 or 3 minutes of doing some basic flossing. Don't kid yourself though. This is ruthless. Like, it's painful. Like, yeah. flossing is no joke. Like when I decided to go down the road of manufacturing it for my clients and then advertising it and selling it, I made sure that I was very transparent with that. Like, this is not a romantic event.
Yeah, exactly. This is
quite grisly and quite brutal, but the return on investment is pretty significant. And what I found is, especially when it comes to shoulders or wrists or carpal tunnel issues, or you have elbow problems, like one of the most common problems that I see for a lot of people is like golfers and tennis elbow. And it's such a challenging obstacle to navigate because it's a mix of strength and a mix of this, but people want results now. They want results like today. They don't want to wait. They don't want to train. They don't want to do things. And the really unique thing about flossing is it will get you those results now. In 2 or 3 minutes, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be grinding through your teeth as it hurts, but sure enough, it will unlock a new level of potential and it will restore a decent amount of range of motion. And sometimes that added boost, right, that extra 30, 40, 50% of range of motion is just enough for you to restore an idealistic or an optimal movement pattern so that you don't hurt yourself in the future. Because sometimes one of the problems is, and you know this from your athletes, but sometimes athletes, like if you're coaching a team, right?
Right.
You had a hard workout the day before, the team comes in the next day, but they're all so sore
that they're
moving like terribly.
Yep.
But the problem is that terrible movement, just because they're fighting through that soreness, they're not driving the right result that they should be getting from that training session.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you're going from a heavy squat day where your legs are smoked out and then you do like deadlifts the next day, there's going to be some compensation measures. And in a high competitive environment, you're going to find that some athletes are going to crack, and then you're going to see worse injuries than if they just optimize themselves properly.
Yep. So with the flossing, let's say a person, is there any way to do it for the person who may not have bands or anything like that to do it, or?
So basically, although you will not replicate the experience 100%, one of the other ways that I found to get a similar effect, and you may notice in some of my content, I've done one where I've put a blue band kind of over my shoulder or under my shoulder, and I swung a kettlebell or whatever. Basically what you're trying to do, what the whole concept of flossing is that, let's say for instance, you apply pressure to a tissue. So let's say I just use the bottom of my hand here to clamp down on my bicep. Mm-hmm. And then I'm moving my bicep through its full range of motion. Okay. So what's happening is this amount of pressure is causing an obstruction and a block to the tissue from moving. Mm-hmm. But as you move through it, basically you are grinding out the adhesions, or you're grinding out all of the fascial layers that have built up, mm-hmm. to basically restore that function. So basically your muscle filaments are going to move a little bit better. You're going to move a little bit smoother. And because there's less spider webs going on in the muscles,
right,
you should have access to kind of better extension or better end range. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll say this too for those that are listening. Whenever you have an injury, following an injury, really, whether it be a low-grade injury, high-grade injuries, soft tissue, whatever, you're going to have some scar tissue there. So it's very important to – I don't really know the word to use not work through it, but it's important to address that area that may have a lot of scar tissue. Basically, what scar tissue is, whenever we experience trauma from an injury, your body is naturally going to produce, it's kind of like a scab. That's the best way I can say it. Like you fall down on concrete, you get a scab, it scars over. That's the same thing that happens within your body. So it's important. That's why we do things such as foam rolling, flossing, like we're talking about now, even mobility training, is because if you don't address and try to get a lot of that stuff out, if not all of it, or get the range of motion back completely over time, you're going to lose that range of motion, and it's going to become almost like, it's almost like you're trying to bust concrete and get that range of motion back, is the best way I can say it. I hope I explained it well, but that's kind of the thing following an injury. That's why I always say it's important to work on that range of motion and really working on getting that scar tissue down and out, and not just saying, oh, I'm healed, I'm better, and running from there. So
for sure. For sure, for sure. It's like changing the oil in a car. Mm-hmm. I mean, if your oil is all grimy and you know, got particles in it, it's going to be causing a bunch of friction, and it's going to not be in a very efficient machine. Once you clean it all out and you have, you know, a good oiled up system, the system's going to be a lot more efficient. It's going to have access to, all, you know, it's going to just drive better results. And to be honest, that brings up kind of another really, really, really good point for a lot of people, is that when I train clients or when I do stuff with people,
yeah,
my formula for kind of how I get really good results with people is that I always start with some form of the soft tissue, and I call it the smash. Okay. Like you're smashing the tissue. So that could be with a barbell, could be flossing, could be any kind of foam rolling. You're trying to restore pliability of the tissue. You're trying to restore kind of a decent amount of glide in that tissue. And then I go from, so I call it the smash, stretch, and train. And the stretching part is where I would introduce things like the banded joint mobilizations. And the reason these are valuable is because once the tissue is capable of movement, you want to expose it to the ideal movement that you're trying to achieve.
Okay.
So by doing a banded joint mobilization right after smashing the tissue, you are going to get a better result. And the reason I'm a huge fan of bands is because sometimes your nervous system doesn't want to relax in that position.
Yeah.
And what happens is if you're holding that for 30 to 40 to 50 seconds, sure enough, your nervous system will relax, but the band never stops pulling. So it will take advantage of the slack that you give it, which is why I find that the results with a band are just 10 times better. Because I was a stiff person for years and years and years. And I always found stretching such a waste of time because I never got the results. But I found that, you know, the dynamic nature of how a band was constantly pulling on that joint to create space drove amazing results. And then finally, the part like that everybody neglects, and that, you know, and one of the reasons, because one of the questions that we were going to discuss is, you know, should you stretch before or after whatever?
Right, right, right.
The reason I follow this formula is because you're not likely to keep the results of your mobility training if you don't use them after you do them. So by basically opening yourself up to a level of ideal form and technique, and then you hit it, your nervous system will respond to load. That's where the adaptation takes place. Whereas when you are stretching, this is more of a passive thing. The nervous system's trying to relax as it opens up, but you need to, use what you gain in order to keep it. So by adding load, by doing your squats immediately after you warm up your squats, you're going to find that the return on investment is 10 times better. And before you know it, your depth is better. Your overall technique is better. Mm-hmm. And you may not actually even be getting stronger, but your average strength should go up simply because you're moving better.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I aim for with a lot of athletes, and that's something that I've learned over the years, is efficiency. Efficiency mm-hmm. of motion is a lot better than just getting and going through the motions. Because if you can move efficiently, you got plenty of energy to do it more times than not, versus, like we talked about at the very beginning, muscling your way through. We'll mm-hmm. do this, man. You give me an hour of your time. And so, sure. again, where tell me again, is it Quebec, Canada? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I'm in Quebec. I'm in Montreal.
I can't even say Montreal. I can say that. I can't say Quebec. Is it Quebec or Quebec?
Well, a bit of both. You could say both. Yeah. All right.
So I'm going to ask you this, right?
We give Americans a lot of grace when they say Canadian stuff. You can say it however you want. It's all good.
Hey, I'm going to ask you this question, right? Yeah. Is there any question you've always wanted to answer but never been asked?
To be honest, I don't really, to be honest, most people ask usually pretty kind of going over like similar things, right? Like they want to know whether stretching is better before or after and whatnot. Like these are usually mm-hmm. the pressing questions that most people have. And in my defense, I think that yes, even though there are studies and stuff that suggest that stretching is not good for you in terms of driving your output out, one of the reasons why I have a hard time falling into that category is that perhaps in a vacuumed environment where all the athletes are, you know, properly calibrated, properly tested, this and that, maybe stretching may not drive the highest return on investment when it comes to performance output.
Right.
But where I'm 100%, I will defend it till the day I die that you should stretch before you train, is simply because none of us are living in a vacuum where our lives are 100% perfect. Mm-hmm. And we will get a better return on our performance simply by reorganizing our body to perform that task better than if we are to worry about, you know, getting from, you know, a 350-pound back squat to like a 375. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, one of the main questions that I get asked all the time, and it's like probably the number one question I get asked on all my content, is when do you do these techniques? Do you do them after? Do you do them on their own day? And you do them? It's like, no, I do them always before, and I'm always doing them with an intent to drive a better result with whatever I'm training.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you know, one of the things that I really try to drive home with a lot of this content that I post is you really want to find out what it is that you need to do that task as good as possible, and then just focus on the muscles that you need to make sure that that is good as possible, and then build your program around that, making sure that you're building like a very well-rounded, well-developed program and constantly improving the areas that are holding you back from a technique perspective.
To me, the mobility stuff, like we were talking about, that knee technique that I got from you, to me, that felt better before my workout than waiting till after. Because if I go into the workout knowing I need my legs, or I'm about to do a leg exercise, like, just the most sense to me is like, let's go ahead and address that, because it's going to be a thing that holds me back if I go through a whole workout routine and I never address it and then address it later. And like you said, because the results, and this is me, I'm going to take the science away. This is me talking as a common sense person. Because mm-hmm. the results are instantaneous or within 2 or 3 minutes, why wouldn't I use it then versus when I'm cold and I'm just going to go right back to being stiff? So,
well, I mean, to remember the day that you did those 50 box jumps?
Yeah.
for sure, that barbell calf smash would have helped out a lot.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I'll say, to add to that too, you brought up a good point about the feet. I've always had weak ankles and foot problems. And then once I started addressing mobility and strengthening my feet, I haven't had those problems. I actually can stand now and stand for a long time and be comfortable, versus where I used to be like, man, my feet hurt. It didn't matter what the shoe was. Didn't matter what I had going on. I just didn't like, you know, I felt like it was something that was going to be chronic versus something that I could fix on my own.
But to bring that even further, I mean, it's a very common reflex, and I see it a lot in clients and I see it a lot in athletes, that there's a reflex to want to stretch and foam roll and stuff after your session. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if this just comes from a place of it feels good, so I want to do it. And I'm okay with people wanting to do stuff for the sake of it feeling good. But in a world where we're really trying to get the most out of every little thing that we're trying to do, I find that, you know, you definitely want to be putting your efforts in a position where it will drive you a better return that is measurable and scalable to get you better. Because like I said, the nervous system remembers how you load and how you use tissue. So right. If you're tired from a training session, like after those 50 box jumps, like the barbell calf smash ain't going to do much for you after that, because yeah. your nervous system's fried. Like you're going to be, you know, it'll take you 5 minutes to lie up from the floor before you get the barbell and you start smashing out your calves. So, and then, you know, to bring it home, it's like, well, now they're already warmed up, they're already loose, and now you're just reinforcing something that's already taken place. So it just, like, you know, is it really going to give you the return that you want? No, mm-hmm. they're probably just going to seize up as badly as they did before, you know what I mean? So I would feel like that is probably the biggest question that I get on an ongoing basis in the comments, that I think is, you know, really try to hone in on the perspective that I have, where doing it to get better at whatever you're doing mm-hmm. is probably the way to go.
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to get you back on a podcast, because I got a couple other questions I kind of thought of
go ahead.
Yeah. As we were going through. And so I was like, man, I'm gonna have to get him back. But yeah, that's something too. I know, even with, I think we could probably do another episode as far as talking about the nervous system, central nervous system, and how it's impacted. Because mm-hmm. I know a lot of people, when I say stuff about central nervous system, it's kind of like speaking French, no pun intended, but it's kind of like speaking French. And I will say this is, like, your central nervous system, honestly, whenever we go into something, we'll use the back squat. Most people, that the day after they do back squats, they feel like they've been hit with a truck. And so, or been hit by a truck. And so that's basically, it's not always muscle fatigue. And I have to find a better way to communicate the difference in muscle fatigue versus central nervous system fatigue. But I will say this is, like, if your central nervous system, like, once it's fried, you really don't, there's nothing you can do except give it time to come back. And that's going to be at least 2 to 3 days to refresh. And so, like, what he's saying, what Coach Bailey is saying is, like, you just have to, it's better to be on the front end of this stuff than the back end, because the back end is not giving you anything. The front end, you still got time to figure it out, kind of tinker with everything, because you don't even know. I'll say this, y'all can go to this Instagram page and you won't know if it works or not, because if you do everything after and you already saw it, it's not, everything feels the same. So I would definitely go for doing that first.
You're 100% right. This is a very good point. But the other thing is that when you integrate it into the warm-up routine, let's say you do it kind of, you know, you do a mobilization, then you go do some squats. You're like, something's not right. Go back and pick another one, and then go back and do your squats. You'll be like, now I feel better. So it's like you're kind of testing and checking to make sure that the system is working properly. And then, you know, before you know it, but to highlight your point, people definitely don't give enough credit to how the nervous system impacts the metabolic demand. Like if you are smoked, there is nothing that's going to happen. Like you've fried the system. And if you're not managing that in a way, and I think that's where a lot of modern coaches are really aware of, because back in the day, some of the coaches I've had in my day, you know, they would just say, keep running until you're throwing up or whatever. It's like, yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, is that really driving the best return for the athlete? And is it really driving the most longstanding return? So
they just want you to push through it.
It's cooked.
Yeah.
You're only going to put yourself in harm's way.
Let's end with a light question. We're going to end with a fun question.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you read this one when I said it to you, but I said, if you could be any professional athlete, what sport would you play and why?
Well, so a bit of a backstory. I played 1 year in the States in NCAA. I played lacrosse. I played for a D2 school, and we ended up going to the Final Four. I played for Limestone College, and I was always a huge lacrosse player. And then I had transferred to McGill, so I would say that if I could have taken that all the way, I would have done it. I would have taken it all the way if I could have. But you know, it gets a little bit harder to keep up as you finish school and you finish university and stuff like that. So, and it's not exactly like an NFL paycheck. You know what I mean? So but yeah, that was my thing, and I was a big fan of that.
Yeah. Man, that's great. I appreciate it. Like I said, man, for sure. You getting on the podcast. We definitely got to do it again. I know it took us some time to link together and get it all squared away, but I appreciate the time. And, man, if it's anything I can ever do for you, anything we can do for you, just let us know. And, man, I appreciate it. I'm definitely going to take a lot of stuff you said, even with the, man, I'm cutting this part too. So, even with the, like I said, with the shoulder mobility stuff, because I'll say I went back to your page too, because with my left shoulder, I had a problem. Like, I don't even know what I did or how it came about, but it just popped up one day. And so, at first I thought like maybe I separated my shoulder. Then I thought, well, maybe it's something with the rotator cuff, but it was neither. I don't think it's either of those. I just can't load it like I normally could through a bench press. So like when, of course a bench press is not advantageous because the bar doesn't move and you're stuck in this one spot, but I'm not one of those people that, I don't do the quarter bench. So I don't stop above my chest. I go full range of motion back up. And, man, like I said, that I ain't gonna say to quote me on this one. I think you call it the world's greatest stretch or something like that. But it's the one where you take the band.
Oh, no, I call it the best.
Yeah. So you take the band, put it under your foot, put it on your shoulder, and do that. And so I did that, and it felt a lot better. And so, man, the content you put out is awesome and great. And man, I know why a lot of people follow you. So, man, just that's the best thing I've learned from you, is like put out quality stuff, and the rest will take care of itself.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.